sit down, boys. Have I got a treat for you?
Fighting the fight when it comes to technology. We are the knights of the kingdom of geekery. We rise up when it comes to the challenge of discussing all this nerd knowledge. We are the digital soup. We are the digital soup. We bring information with lots of laughter. Tune in now if that's what you're after. Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. We are the Digital Soup. With Jason, Adam, and usually Dave.
Hey there. Welcome back to Digital Soup, the only podcast that goes out of their way to always put baby in a corner.
You got to.
I don't want her anywhere but in that corner.
Because of Roadhouse.
Nose in the corner is what I say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep, she deserves it, all that freaky dancing she does. I mean, it's a little suggestive, you know. I don't want my kids watching that.
In that movie, the scene that happens right before that one where the sister is singing her song. Do you remember that annoying song?
I did see it once, and I don't remember anything else except that line.
So. I don't remember that song either.
I've seen the movie so many times. And
I'm sure you have.
It's a good flick, but there's her older sister, I think, is performing at the talent show, and she's singing some song right before.
Was it?
No, it's not that one. It's some other song, and it is one of the most annoying sounding songs I've ever heard.
So it was like bop.
No,
not as bad as that.
Nope, not as bad as that.
All right, well, let's get this going here. Everybody, my name's Jason, and joining me in the virtual studio today is Adam and usually Dave. How's it going, Pex?
Pretty good, Daikini.
What?
You heard me.
I stole a baby. I was worried that you hadn't watched it because I don't think you ever responded when I said, hey, you guys did watch it, right?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure.
I loved who that actor was, yeah.
Preemptive strike that we're going to be talking about the movie Willow today.
Yeah. Well, everybody knows because they already seen the title. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But we got a lot of other stuff going on besides just Willow. What's going on, guys?
Well, John Cena might be joining the Suicide Squad, apparently.
Oh, man, I read that totally wrong. I thought the headline was John Cena gets a pacemaker. Oh, I thought all that wrestling and all those steroids, now his heart's failing him. That's well, not what's not. Going on?
Nope.
Well, what I is guess, going on there, Adam?
Well, it sounds like there's kind of a reboot-ish version of the Suicide Squad coming out.
Reboot already after one
that's
show?
That's how it's being described a little bit. James Gunn is doing this one, but...
Well, he did them. Oh, yeah, that's right. I was going to say he did them all, but that was Guardians. Sorry, I do apologize.
True, true, true. So, but it's still going to have Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, so...
And is she the only returning, Boomerang. Or is anybody else returning?
Jai Courtney as Captain Boomerang.
Right. So, and
I don't know.
I think the, what's her name, Waller, the cop lady, I think she was supposed to be in it too.
Yeah, one of the interesting thing here is because of, you know, Will Smith, this guy's a massive star, so his schedule is always just chaotic, probably trying to fit things in, and he just could not be around for Suicide Squad 2, so they... You know, recast Deadshot. That's just, how are they going to explain it? Are they just going to say, well, it's just another black guy?
Well, I don't know, because everyone thought Idris Elba was going to be the new Deadshot, but he is not playing.
What?
Nope.
The article that I linked here even says he is.
Nope, he is not actually, from what I've heard, he is not playing the role of Deadshot, and he has come out and said that, I believe, actually.
Huh.
He will be in the movie, but just not as Deadshot, which
dang
leads me
you,
to believe,
Gizmodo, lying to me.
Well, it leads me to believe that he may actually be one of the villains, potentially. But
oh, he's still part of the movie. He's just not playing that character.
Yeah, yeah, he's in the movie, but he's okay. Just not playing that character that everyone assumed. So,
Well, hopefully it's better than the last one.
Well, you know, it's James Gunn, you know, from Guardians. So
yeah, and I did not think that, you know, the first one was that bad. I mean, it was not, you know, up to Marvel standards, but I mean, it was definitely up to DC standards.
Well,
not some of them. There's been a few good, really decent DC movies. Dave, how was Shazam? Was it pretty decent?
I enjoyed it. It's fun. Now, I was talking to a friend of mine, one of our listeners, the mailman, and he went and saw it, and he kind of summed it up perfectly, where it's kind of the ideal movie for like 14 and under or 12 and under or something like that. He actually said the same about Captain Marvel. But I thought watching it, I don't know, I'll watch it again once, but maybe not, I don't know. But it was a lot of fun. There was a lot of good moments, some good humor, good story, great for kids. And a little bit of, I won't call it scary, but there's, early on you see these, it's basically the seven sins, you know, gluttony and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But they're represented by kind of these like gargoyle style demons. And they
were any of them played by Brad Pitt?
No.
How fat was the gluttony demon?
Oh, they're pretty big, but they were like kind of almost dragon demons, weird. But the thing is, their styling, you remember in Ghostbusters, what was the big bad?
Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
No. Like the gargoyle dogs that come alive and some like of that kind of stuff.
Zool.
Yeah, those things. They remind me of that kind of a look, only modern day. And so I could see it if they're young kids. Like my youngest probably would get a little scared of that. But
Okay. I'll definitely see when it comes out on video.
Speaking of James Gunn.
Yeah.
I bet you Samsung wishes they had Guardians of the Galaxy, considering their fold displays are already failing.
I like what you did there, Adam.
Thank you.
That's pretty nice.
So apparently just a few days after journalists, including the people over at Android Central, whose article I'm reading, got their hands on the Galaxy Fold for the first time, a lot of reports surfaced that the initial review devices are having out-and-out screen failures, to quote this article. So at least four different devices have had major screen issues that required fully replacing the device. So as, you know, I think we've kind of speculated, the moving parts and everything in here are prone to failure.
Yeah, and some of it was just because people didn't understand what was going on. The documentation was not very good. You know how when you get a lot of devices, it has that peel-off cover, you know, over the glass?
Mm-hmm.
You peel it off. Well, I guess it kind of looked like you should be able to peel off this layer on the top. And so people were peeling it off. But that was actually part of the phone itself,
part of the screen.
And when they pulled it off, sometimes it would start to fail when they got halfway through, or they'd get it all the way off. But as soon as they started bending it, it would, I don't know exactly what it, you know, how it protected it, but it protected it to where the screen wouldn't crack at the hinge. And there's videos out there of the displays where like the left half is flickering and there's a line straight down the middle because it didn't have any protection, and that fold instantly took it. And another issue that they're having is when you lay it out flat, the hinge is not protected. It's not totally enclosed, so things can't get into it. So like, say you set it down on a surface and there's a potato chip, or there's, you know, a little rock for some reason, something that gets up into that, and then when you're opening and closing it, it gets up underneath that lip and it pushes up on the screen, and that's been cracking the displays. So there's several issues here that are going on with this Galaxy Fold, and yes, this is version 1.0, so there is going to be some issues with it, and that's why. You know, I never get, even very, very seldom do I buy a console on launch. I've done it a couple of times in my life, but most of the time I wait until almost end of life, like when I got my PS4. I just, you know, you wait and the versions you get are going to be so much better. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I know there's a lot of early adopters out there that they have to have the latest and the greatest. And I can't spend $2,000 on a phone with the first iteration of it. I mean, I want it to mature a little bit. I don't want no toddler for $2,000. I want myself a 34-year-old. Does that make any sense?
That's a terrible analogy. Anyway,
I know, sorry.
Right.
Hey, I'm perfect at analogies. I don't know what you're talking
about. My honest, real question is, do you really want a phone where the screen folds in half anyways? I mean,
it could be kind of cool because then you could have a tablet and a phone all together.
Yeah.
I want to wait until we have holograms or something where the screen's not breakable.
We want Iron Man tech where it's
that'd be sweet.
You reach out in front of you in the air and it just shows up.
Yep. Or even some of the futuristic ones that they've shown, it's just a big transparent block and you've got, that'd be awesome. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
Right. You guys, not to change the subject here, but before we dive into our super reviews, I wanted to bring something up. I shared it on our Digital Soup Facebook page earlier today, and I don't know if you guys, Adam, I know you haven't seen Jason. I don't know if you got a chance to, but it's a question posed about Batman, one of my favorites. But it's really kind of an interesting thought. So I thought, let me bounce this off you guys. It says, what if Bruce Wayne is actually in Arkham the whole time and Batman is just a delusion he has? Would all of his villains be the orderlies and doctors who work there? So they give examples. Poison Ivy is the nurse who sedates him when he gets out of control. Two-Face is an abusive orderly who acts nice when the doctors are around and then beats up the patients when their backs are turned. Riddler is a therapist who asks him questions that he has a hard time answering. Mad Hatter is a hypnotherapist who Bruce is convinced is trying to brainwash him. And, of course, his arch-nemesis, Dr. Joe Carr, and his assistant, Dr. Harleen Quinzel. They see Bruce as their top patient, both desperately trying to bring the man back to sanity, and Batman will fight with all he has to protect Gotham from Joker and Harley Quinn. Can you imagine a line that, you know, or like a series in the comics that all of a sudden brought that storyline to play?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I love those kind of conspiracy theories where it's pretty far-fetched, of course, because it's not true, but I mean,
it would kill
a lot of the evidence lines up.
Right. It's pretty nuts.
Tis.
Adam, you watching Game of Thrones?
Yes, I am.
All right. So without spoiling anything, how do you feel about it so far? Are you caught up the first two episodes?
Yep, I'm caught up.
All right.
Meh.
It's kind of disappointing.
Yeah. I don't know if it's... Is this the first season where it's not being written by George R. R. Martin?
No, he hasn't written in a while.
Oh, okay.
Back it's around, very, it's I been, think, season
all
five.
I can say, it's been very underwhelming, but I'm hopeful for better things.
Yeah, I think, you know what, I was telling Jason pre-show, I know he hasn't watched it, so I don't want to spoil anything. For listeners, we don't want to spoil anything, but, you know, they came out and said, this is the final season. We know there's only, what is there, 6 or 7 episodes a season? So it's a short season anyways, and we heard all this talk about how, you know, it's short, but the episodes are going to run well over an hour, and, you know, all of this stuff, there's so much to pack in, and the first episode was very much kind of like, okay, we're getting the reunions.
Yep,
we're
getting back into the swing of things.
Yep, seeing people that haven't seen each other since maybe season 1, you know, they're reuniting.
How to Train Your Dragon 4.
Right. And we're seeing this stuff happen. We're finding out some big reveals, but it's all dialogue driven. And I thought, all right, now episode 2 is where things are going to really pick up. And I kept waiting for it and waiting for it. And then
both
episodes come in at only an hour or less. And there is not a single shred of actual action in any of them. Some really good moments. I mean, don't get me wrong.
There was a pretty cool moment in the second episode there.
Right. Towards the end with a knight.
Yep.
Yep. That was very cool.
Yep. That's kind of the highlight of it. The rest of it was like, hey, let's, you know, no spoilers, but not a lot of
action.
This is why
I tell you, you have to watch Walking Dead.
Go ahead.
I just finished Star Trek Discovery.
I haven't watched the last episode yet, but I am so excited for it.
It was actually quite awesome.
Actually, what do you mean? This whole season was
it's been
very,
yeah, it's been a good season, but
I can't wait for the Captain Pike and Spock spinoff.
Oh, jeez.
No, they're seriously doing it. It's in serious talks.
Yep,
right
they're
now.
Calling it Spike.
Captain Spike, get it right.
Yeah.
No, there was a moment, without spoiling anything, everyone's favorite drunken person, Tyrion Lannister, he has a comment in passing that made me wonder if that was just a major, like, foretelling, foreshadowing of what could happen, which would be pretty, pretty nuts. But I won't say what the line is, but he's talking with someone and makes a comment about doing something if the war goes poorly. So, it's good. I'm hoping it looks like the next week, you know, next week's episode, this Sunday is going to finally bring us this war.
Now, is Jason Momoa in this season?
No, he hasn't been in for a while.
I know he died.
They summon Aquaman
the first season.
Yeah, to beat the White Walkers.
He comes out of what was the Night's Watch castle by the bay? I forget. Oh. We'll just say he comes out and takes over the Iron Islands.
The Iron Islands. Is that in Game of Thrones?
Yep.
Yeah, see, I just don't know any of that stuff.
You know what's another really good epic fantasy entertainment option? Willow.
No, it's not.
I stole a baby.
I think, okay, should we talk about Willow?
Let's get into Willow.
So let's get into this. Let's talk about how this reluctant dwarf has to play a critical role in protecting a special baby from the evil queen. 1988's Willow, directed by Ron Howard, written by George Lucas, starring Val Kilmer, Joanne Whalley, who later actually went on to be Val Kilmer's wife.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Warwick Davis. Yeah, they got married after this movie.
Yeah.
What else is she be in? She be in?
What else does she be in?
I don't know what's up with my speaking lately.
It seems to me that she had a few movies back around that time in the 80s and then kind of dropped out as she was, you know, raising their, I think they had one kid together, maybe two. And just recently,
was
in the last,
Warwick Davis one of their children?
No. In the last couple of years, just recently, she was finally starting to make a comeback, not a comeback, but starting to book jobs again because she took time off basically to be a mother. But the big thing she was supposed to be in, which I don't know if we saw or if, well, we probably won't see it if we didn't yet, but at the end of Marvel's The Defenders, which was the team up, you know, show with Daredevil and everything, she was going to play the role of one of the nuns that was part of this massive storyline with Daredevil that we were supposed to see going forward. I don't know if we ever did. I never saw the third season of Daredevil yet, but
I haven't seen the first full season yet.
Yeah.
Well, she was also in The Man Who Knew Too Little with Bill Murray back in 97.
Okay.
Great movie.
Was it? I can't really remember it. Was he a secret agent?
No, not on purpose.
Okay. But I think I'm thinking of that same movie.
Now,
so anyway,
when we look at Willow, this movie actually had some pretty big names tied to it. You know, we get an early career Ron Howard directing.
Yeah, he was still Opie at that point.
Not quite that early, but not far off. I don't know what else he had done at that point. We've got George Lucas playing in his sandbox between Star Wars movies or after Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And then we get Bob Dole, man, writing the screenplay. Remember Bob Dole? Bob Dole, man. He was the screenplay writer. But no, Val Kilmer.
Hold on. I have one thing I have to say about that joke you just did. Oh, my gosh.
What is that
get
from?
It? Migosh was his friend's name.
Oh,
in Willow.
Oh okay.
Oh, oh my gosh.
No, we had
shut
we had
up, Burgle Cut.
Val Kilmer was in here. Now, one of my favorite people that popped up that I didn't realize was in this movie was Kevin Pollak.
Oh, yeah.
Who was he in that?
He was
one of the brownies.
Yeah, the brownies, the little fairies. That he's the one that stole the baby and got drunk and fell in love with a cat and all that stuff. one of the two that's with him the whole time. Yeah, when he popped up, I'm like, who is that?
So tying into our theme when we reviewed World of Warcraft, or no.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this because I was going to mention this too.
You know, they clearly stole hey, I'm getting chased by something. Put the baby in a basket. Send it down the river.
Yeah.
Boom. Samesies.
Yep, that's what I was going to say. We had two super reviews in a row that had a Moses scene. Really? Yeah, are we picking these based on Moses scenes?
Well, let's start with that.
Can we think of another one for next time?
Yeah, right. The Ten Commandments. No, I'm just kidding. no, I want to talk about that because this movie opens up and we see the evil queen. I forget the name.
Yeah, the other movie opened up too.
Balmorda. Yeah. And, you know, there's a prophecy that a child will be born with a mark on its arm that will, you know, basically mean her downfall. And so she's going out killing, you know, checking babies for this mark and then going to kill the baby.
It's kind of biblical there too.
Right. And so there's the scene opens up. You know, some woman in a prison had a kid that has the mark on its arm. So the jailers go to get the queen so she can take the baby and kill it. And one of the nursemaids sneaks the baby out in the laundry and runs away. Now, this was the first note I had about this movie. That's kind of your opening sequence. Now, this woman is running and then walking and walking, and seasons are changing, and the baby goes from being literally newborn, you know, just popped out of its mom, and then they kill the mom, and all of a sudden this baby's got like a full head of hair. It's like months old, not a year old yet, but, you know, months and months old. And I'm trying to figure out how much time passed, because right after that nursemaid leaves, the queen releases those weird, like, rat dogs, the wild dogs. Why did it take those dogs that long to catch up to her when they were just tearing through everything when they finally caught up to her?
I don't know.
They're just really
inconsistency
they take long breaks.
In the script.
Yeah, it was very weird. Like,
those are union hounds.
Time really, really seemed to work strangely in this film.
Since we're talking about this right now, about those dogs that were attacking, what were they? They weren't. What was this race of little people called?
The Nelwyn.
The Nelwyn. Yep. Okay, so when they attacked the Nelwyn and the Nelwyn men killed the one,
right?
Yep.
So Willow, he's like trying to find his two kids, right?
Yep.
He finds his two kids. He's hugging them, saving them and stuff. And they're like, oh, it was after a baby. And then he thinks about his wife. He runs out of town, leaving the two kids he just saved. He's like, boom, I'm out of here. I got to go find my wife.
Right.
Wouldn't you take your kids with you? Like,
well, no, the kids are safe next to all the other warriors that just took down the hound.
Right.
Yeah, they're big warriors. And of course he has to run back to his wife because, I mean, she had the most lovely smile I've ever
seen.
Kaya!
I miss Kaya and the Bubbins.
Yeah, well, I was going to say she must be British because you saw her teeth, right?
Oh. Did you know that Warwick Davis was only 17 years old when he played Willow?
I believe he looked older than that, though.
He was wearing a wig. But anyway, as far as the story goes, they've decided they need to get this baby out of here.
Yeah.
And so they send Willow and this other party of hilarious.
Let's not jump people. Too far ahead because I think it bears bears talking. No, I think it bears talking about the idea of magic and how it plays in here, because after that dog attack, they decide they can't keep the baby. They got to bring it to the village elders or whatever. Yeah. And right before that dog attack, Willow fails to be chosen as an apprentice, and he's supposed to pick a finger or something from this crazy looking village wizard or whatever he is.
Who also played the little guy in UHF, but anyway.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. But I mean, that little wizard in the village, he's very suspect when it comes to his magic. Like, he seems like he's just faking it most of the time, except for then he turns that rock into a bird and is like, follow the bird. And then
well,
the bird
you do
flies.
Have to fake it till you make it though, right?
Yeah, but the bird flies right back to town and he's like, never mind, follow the river, you know, and magic.
I thought that was funny.
It's a very weird thing. Cause this movie, there's some very dark kind of murdery moments, you know, super
murdery.
Dark. Tonally, this movie's very strange, but most of this movie in a lot of ways, it's almost tongue in cheek, just lighthearted fun. It's more hobbits and, you know, Bag End or whatever than it is like Mordor. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. But then there's just some weird magic, and we see that, you know, Willow, he wants to be a sorcerer, and he pretends he's this powerful sorcerer the whole time. So then they pick this group, throw him out of town, and they have to go, as Adam was saying, deliver this baby. So I thought that was worth mentioning, how the magic was a little
They weren't delivering a baby. They were delivering a baby.
Well, yeah, like a mail delivery, you know, package delivery. No, that's still bad.
Before we carry on here, can I drop two quick movie facts on you guys?
Sure.
Dropping some flick facts. All right. And you probably already know these, but I didn't know them until I looked them up. But Warwick Davis, he played Wicket in Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you did know that? All right.
Yes.
And then since this goes with that, I'm going to drop this a little bit of knowledge on you too. Based on the performance of Wicket in Return of the Jedi, George Lucas wrote the story for Warwick. It wasn't written about, you know, it wasn't written for Val Kilmer or any of the other characters. This was written for Warwick.
Right.
So that's kind of cool.
That's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so that's just two little facts I wanted to drop
on. Good facts, good facts.
And now a personal fact that I found in this movie was that I thought the special effects of those brownies was simply amazing.
Blue screen.
I loved
1988.
Yeah.
I know.
That's the thing with this flick. There was so much practical effects. It was really, it's an old movie.
Yep.
And we know that. But when you look at it, there's some, for the time, some pretty good effects that were happening. You know,
I don't think ILM was, you know, at their top with this movie.
At the time they were.
Well, yeah, because this would have been.
This is after Star Wars.
After Return of the Jedi. Yep. I think Jedi had better special effects than this.
Yeah. Well, a different style.
Well, at least the space stuff, you know.
Right.
Well, anyway. They get to the crossroads, the Daikini crossroads. That's the Nelwyn's name for the humans. And there's a guy trapped in a cage, and it's Val Kilmer as Mad Mardigan, who's like, "Release me. I'll take care of the baby. Yeah. And I'm the greatest swordsman there ever was."
AKA Han Solo.
Yep.
So, and he also had really nice teeth.
Yep.
Now, what else had Val Kilmer done at that point? Had he done Top Gun already?
Yes, I believe so. I think in reading that he had done Top Gun. And prior to that, he was also Top Secret. I think he had done Top Secret. And Real Genius. I think all of those were prior to that.
So he's a big name. So when we see him back in 88, you see him pop up in that cage, he's instantly recognizable. You know, he's a star. Well, he's a pretty big star, though,
he's
at that
Iceman.
Point. Yeah.
Yes.
So, basically, Willow and Migosh, the Meek, decide, okay, we can trust this guy, kind of.
Yeah.
And then they decide to let him go.
The big, fat Nelwyn, bald-headed one that's a jerk to Willow.
Yep, the guy got pooped on.
Yeah, he's like a classic just bully.
Well, it's because he was the largest of these.
He reminded me of Bald Bull from Punch-Out.
Kind of, yeah. Kind
anyway.
Of.
Anyway.
Who's his Star Wars equivalent?
Jabba.
I actually thought it would have been the prequels, but the guy that owned Anakin and his mom. Remember the slave owner guy?
I don't remember that.
He kind of reminded me of that, but I don't know who he would be kind of who the equivalent would be in the original trilogy from 70s through early 80s.
Probably Leia.
Yeah, he was definitely Leia.
Hey, so since we're talking a lot of Star Wars, let me throw this in here. Did you guys notice a lot of the Star Wars transitions? Scene transitions?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like the screen slides and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Very reminiscent of Star Wars.
So, and they're on their way back, and all of a sudden they find that one of my favorite lines in the movies, "I stole the baby from a stupid Daikini."
Yeah.
So the little brownie sound? Creatures.
"I stole the baby."
Kevin Pollak steals a child.
Right.
Are you making that your ringtone?
That would be awesome, but
out
probably,
of context, people probably calling not, the cops.
Not appropriate.
But, not appropriate.
Anyway, they chase them, blah, 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 and then they find out the baby's name's Elora Danan, and she's a future empress of of the kingdom and all this other stuff. It's your classic 80s fantasy
Heroes Quest
stuff. Yeah, yep. Heroes Quest with the you know the literal little guy.
Yep.
You know, trying to
it's Frodo. It's Bilbo, it's Frodo on their quest, you know. In a lot of ways, it really, really takes that mindset as well.
I think Warwick Davis did an awesome job in here.
I think he did too. Now, here's the question I have for you, because we still have yet to get into the bad guys and when things heat up here. But what this movie, when you see the when we look at the plot point, you know, so far what we talked about, in your eyes when you watched it, was it more about the quest for saving this baby and the kingdom and all of that, or was it the hero's journey for Willow?
To me, more of the hero's journey.
Yeah?
Yep.
It was a coming of age movie.
Yeah, kind of.
This whole party goes and finds themselves. I'm just kidding.
Hey, well, did you guys notice that one scene though when Link finally meets Navi?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yep.
That was pretty cool.
And then he stole a baby.
My favorite part was when Gandalf showed up and he was like, "Han, I'm here to help." And he was like, "Thanks, Harry Potter." But that's, oh, sorry. That's Serenity. Wrong movie.
Oh, I love Serenity. That's great. Firefly, one of my favorites. Yep.
So who?
Starring Bill Murray?
No.
So as they finally give in, the rest of the party leaves. They say, we're going home, and Willow just can't do it. You know, obviously, they leave the baby with Val Kilmer after they release him, and then the baby stealing happens. But before that, we see this giant army. Who was that guy that was the head of the army? Was it Eric?
Yeah.
Eric's army? Who is that actor? Because he looks super familiar to me, and I cannot remember
why. He did look familiar, but when I looked it up, I did not recognize the name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was, you know who he kind of reminded me of, now that I think of it? What, is it Busey's kid? Not Crazy Gary Busey, but Jake Busey?
Well, he would have been a little too young, I think.
Right, but maybe that's why, because that guy kind of has that look a little bit.
Guy's name was Gavin O'Herlihy.
O'Herlihy.
Yep.
Hmm. What about? Go ahead.
Call the Hurley boy.
Can I point out something? Now these, all these soldiers that were flying by them when they were at the cage with Val Kilmer's character, Mad Mardigan, and whatever. Mm-hmm. What were they going after? What were they looking for?
They were going to fight what was her name?
Bavmorda.
Bavmora. I keep on to say Balmora. I don't know.
Oh, okay. So they were the good guys. They weren't the
bad guys. They were the good guys going to fight her.
So I was a little confused at that point because I'm thinking that these were her soldiers looking for a baby,
no.
Yet they would see somebody holding a baby but just keep going.
they really suck at their jobs.
Yeah. Right. Well, we find out they kind of do. Because yep. After that, they take off. They find out the kind of kind of to pick up where Adam left off, where you know they find out the prophecy with this child, and then they're on the run because the bad guys are coming. What was the queen's daughter's name? Was it Sorsha?
Yep.
Okay. And so she's kind of competing with this other knight to prove that, you know, she's just as good. She doesn't need help to her evil queen mother. And we get the queen's, what would you call it, advisor? That the guy that's like, I just read your daughter and she's going to betray you or something.
Hmm.
There's a scene there.
I don't remember.
I don't think it's in the movie. I think you just made it up, David.
No, it's there. It is there. And so then we kind of see the two groups of soldiers, one with Sorsha and one with this other guy that has that crazy skull mask.
Kale. Named after the vegetable.
Yeah, scary stuff.
A little bit.
Let us carry on.
I see what you did there.
But they're out searching, and Val Kilmer reunites with Willow. They try and get to this place because they happen to be heading in the same direction. And they're getting to this island to find a sorcerer who's been banished to this island, who, when we find her, Willow discovers that she's in the form of, what was she, like
she's a possum
or something. Yeah.
Willow, and, you idiot.
Right. And the evil queen, that's when we see more about the magic, because the evil queen, her power basically is to turn people into things.
Yeah.
And hey, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say this is the perfect time for me to drop two more spots of knowledge. Ooh, if you right. allow me to.
Spots.com.
Dropping some flick facts. All right. So if you remember right, Willow originally had three acorns. Yeah. Acorns that were supposed to turn, you know, whatever you throw it into stone, right?
Right.
Now he used two of them.
Well, yeah, he dropped one. He dropped one and then
yeah,
used
that
the
was
one.
One. That yep. was one. And then he threw one at whatever her name is.
The queen, yep.
Okay, but that was his last one. The one that he threw at her, that was the third one. So that's where this comes from. In the Blu-ray release, there is a cut scene. It was completely cut out of it, but when Willow is going to that island in the boat, he is attacked by this like fish-type monster, and he uses the second stone. Well, he attempts to use the second stone on it, and he's trying to throw it at it, but he hits the boat, turns the boat into stone, and the boat sinks.
Oh, really?
Yep. It's in the Blu-ray.
Oh, awesome. I never noticed that he didn't use all his acorns.
Yeah. I remember thinking he only used two, but...
And here's the second bit of knowledge that has to go with this also. This was the very first use of morphine in a film.
Morphine?
Morphine.
Oh, morphing. I thought...
Yeah, you I said like, morphine.
Yeah, I was like, what do you mean?
I pronounced my ING.
They all shot up and got... Really, yes. Really high.
But it's the very pain. First, you know, when at the end where he's trying to turn her into a human again, and mm-hmm. it keeps morphing into different things.
Well, let's talk about that, because the brownie, what would you call her, like
brownie bites,
sorceress, whatever, gives Willow this super powerful wand.
Mm-hmm.
That looks just like a pretty twisted...
A stupid little stick, yeah. Stick.
And so the when he
Wait,
finds...
Wait, no, that's the baby's name, Sticks. Sorry.
Sticks, yeah. When he finds the when he finds the sorceress on the island, she tells him, you have to transform me, and he tries, and he turns her into, what, a raven first?
I think something, so.
Something a bunch like of different animals.
And now...
But yeah, she's a bird,
yeah, she's a crow or a raven, and then she's a goat... And it looks very painful, but this is
And
where
I loved
I was...
it when she was the goat. She's like,
well. Well, and this is what I'm talking about. If you remember, this movie has a bit of kind of a tonality confusion, because we get these very lighthearted overall vibes from this movie. But then when he tries to transform her the first time, she's like this crazy... writhing blob of something, and then this crow rises up out of
it. Yeah, digs itself out of it.
You know, and then when he transforms her and she turns into the goat, same thing, like she melts into this puddle and oop, pops up a goat. And it's really weird, because a little later on, there's a scene that we see as the big battle's happening, that when we get there, I'll mention it, but it's the one scene that I remembered vividly as a kid, terrifying me.
Really?
Yeah. We'll get there.
I'll keep taking us to the destination there.
So Mad Mardigan gets captured as he tries going his own way with the baby. He gets captured, and now the bad guys have them. They bring him to a camp of some sort, which again,
Camp Friendship.
Well, and that was the one that was like full of snow and the mountains and everything else, right? And again, we're in this what seems to be massive kingdom and in lands, you know, where there's, you know, thousands of miles and mountains and all this stuff, and the seasons keep changing and changing.
Yeah,
how much time is this taking?
And that's what I was thinking too, because when he first grabbed the baby, it was like summertime,
right?
And then when they finally get up to whatever the camp was, there's snow on the ground.
Right.
Granted, they're going up into the mountains.
Yeah, they're
I
in
understand.
The mountains,
right? But they come down out of the mountains,
yeah.
Because the fairies accidentally hit Mad Mardigan with their what did they call it? Broken heart potion. Yeah, broken potion of broken hearts or something. And he goes in, they break in, and he's just all high as a kite, and yeah, I'm having fun. They escape their, you know, bonds or whatever, and they have a plan to go steal this baby back from sore ships.
I want my baby back, baby back, baby back. I want my baby back, baby well, back, baby back. I want my baby
Chili's,
back.
Chili's,
baby back
ribs. Chili's, baby back.
Barbecue sauce. Anyway, go on.
In my belly.
So they sneak in the back of this tent, and Sorsha's in there sleeping. Baby's wide awake, making noise. She's just out cold. Now, Mad Mardigan goes in.
Did they put the baby in the corner?
It was in the corner. And instead of grabbing the baby, he sees Sorsha and he falls madly in love. And he's laying on top of her on this bed and she doesn't even wake up. And he starts talking to her. And all of a sudden she pulls a knife like, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And Willow, in the meantime, has snuck in and tried to steal the baby. And he's really saying some, you know, sweep her off her feet type of stuff because he's head over heels because of the potion. And then the tent gets cut down. And all heck breaks loose. And they jump on a shield with the baby and go on the most epic sled ride.
It was awesome.
Yeah, through these mountains. They're flying down. And the my favorite part, and this is where I'm wondering, how long did this take? Like, they were moving, jumping down cliffs. I mean, they traveled a long ways on that shield, only to end in another little village. That really didn't seem that far because the bad guy army just rode their horses down, fast, you know, yeah. And they fought. But Val Kilmer falls off the shield and ends up rolling down the hill, and he rolls into the village as this giant, like, Bugs Bunny style snowball. And yeah. He's just like, all the way down the hill. And bam, he pops into the door and, you know, ooh, the snowball breaks and he's okay. But that's what I mean. Such lighthearted moments like that, which was very fun.
Now, that's also around those scenes is when he finally gets to use his sword. And one of my favorite lines from the whole movie was Willow going, you are great.
Yeah, right.
And then he falls.
Yep. Yeah, and he falls over.
And so they fight. And is that when he captures Sorsha?
Yeah, I think so.
And then he forces them and they go somewhere. Yep. And over this time, they kind of fall in love and he convinces her, you know, that the evil queen, you know, without saying so much, it's just one of those things we're supposed to believe happens on this horse ride, which you could see if it took months, you know, they spent months together.
Yep, she fell for the Iceman.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't? But again, this all takes place seemingly over a matter of a day or a couple days travel. So it's kind of weird that the timeline works really strange in this film. And then, after some other shenanigans, what did you have?
Oh, I was just going to say I got two more facts fast.
Yeah, drop them.
Dropping some flick facts. All right, first fact here, and you're going to think I'm lying about this, but you can look it up. The movie was originally titled Munchkins. Not even joking.
Wasn't that a popular toy back then? Munchkins? That's like a garbage, not garbage patch.
Isn't that straight out of Wizard of Oz?
Well, that was too, but I thought there was, like, you remember Cabbage Patch dolls back in the day? And in Garbage Pail Kids, it was kind of something along those lines, I thought. I could be wrong on that.
And then the second fact I want to drop here, and, you know, this is one of those duh, you know, when you think about it here, but this was the largest casting call for little people in movie history, even more than, I guess, Wizard of Oz.
And Willy Wonka?
I guess.
Although,
when did Willy Wonka come out?
70s, late 70s.
Okay, so then it, because that's what the stats say, it's the largest casting call for little people.
That was late 70s with Gene Wilder. Yeah, had to be.
Yep.
But I wonder, I thought I had heard they had done, they wouldn't have done, like, cloning, you know, type stuff in that.
No, that's illegal. It's really frowned on by, you know.
I mean, humans. Video cloning, like taking one or two actors.
They did not have the technology for 300 back in that day. Okay,
is that a Jeopardy question?
Okay, well,
they didn't have the technology for 300, Alex.
Your what mother.
Anyway,
so then
a glove.
So we get
Turd
to the,
Ferguson. Oh, sorry,
man, we get to the point where they're going to storm the castle. They're going to go and try and defeat the queen. And we've still got the sorceress as a goat, and Sorsha's on his side. And they team up. They've got the army with the Eric's army, I think they call it, the good guys. And a whole bunch of them show up. I feel like I missed something that happened in there, but that's okay. It's not major. They show up and they're gonna storm the castle walls, and the queen's up on the walls way above. This is the magic scene that creeped me out as a kid. When she just yells
pigs.
Yeah, she turns them into, first she turns Mad Mardigan into a pig.
He looked cool too. I mean, I almost thought it was like an orc from Warcraft.
Well, and that scene, I mean, thinking practical effects, that's the one that as a kid, that scene where first he transforms and then all the rest, including her own daughter, get transformed into real, like, live pigs. Mm-hmm. And that just terrified me.
I was looking for a bushel of apples because I was going to get me some pig roast going.
Well, and during this whole time, the goat sorceress lady, she pulls Willow into this little hut.
Is that her name?
I can't remember her name, but she's like,
you
Willow.
You mean the greatest of all time?
Yeah. Yeah. She's like, Willow, in here now. Say this spell, what I told you. Keep doing this protection spell. And he's doing it, and he's like wrestling with it. It's hard work. He makes it look like, and that little staff has a little lightsaber glow to it and seems like it's painful, but he keeps this spell going while all around outside everyone is being turned into swine. And he comes out to find everyone out there as pigs. And he's defeated. You know, what am I going to do? And finally, that's mm-hmm. when we see him succeed. He uses his magic and transforms the sorceress back into a real woman who apparently didn't realize it had been so long, because she says earlier on she's a young woman, and then she comes back and she's an old lady.
Oops,
it's been a long time. But then she essentially uses her magic with the wand and changes everyone back, and they set up a big trap and they storm the castle. And that brings us to the big battle scene then. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. What do you guys think about the fight scenes in this movie as a whole?
I didn't think they were very well choreographed.
Some of them were okay, but
fairly average. Nothing really stands out.
Yeah, most of them felt very clunky because
a lot of the stabbing and slicing and stuff. I mean, I guess maybe I'm a little desensitized now, or not desensitized, but. overly sensitized. No, what am I trying to say? It just, it looks so fake. It was like, all right, I stabbed you under an arm with my sword.
Right, because they weren't showing any blood.
I just had
like
you
that.
Bend over a sword. Yeah. You know, different things like that.
I'm actually okay with that. I mean, especially for a movie that's for, you know, kids.
Right, it's ostensibly
no,
a kid
it scares
movie.
Kids, as Dave told you.
Well, yeah. There was a scary part, yeah, but the story was good. I loved the movie as a kid. I think it was kind of, the timing again gets weird. There's this massive battle happening, right? Mm-hmm. That whole battle takes place in a fraction of the time it takes for that stupid ritual the evil queen is doing up in her tower, which it didn't seem like there was that much to that ritual. You know, and she starts it at night and calls lightning storms and all this other stuff, and it's still going and the battle's raging on. Through the next day, it's daylight all of a sudden, and then it's getting close to evening, and they finally make their way up for the big showdown with the evil queen and the good witch.
And I thought the same thing too, Dave, because if you're going to do a ritual like this, it's what took so long? Why was it a 24-hour ritual? Yeah. I mean, they waited outside for the longest time, where she's in there with the baby doing a ritual. It's like the ritual could take 30 seconds, could take 5 minutes, but they're just waiting outside, you know, biding their time.
Well, here's the other question. She's doing this ritual to banish this child to the realm of something or other.
Just kill it, right?
Yeah, why not? Why not, if you're that evil queen worried about this child growing up to kill you or whatever it's going to be? Why go through this ritual that obviously took a toll on the queen, because she ends up looking a lot like Skeletor towards the end? You know, and
now, in Game of Thrones, do you think they would try to do a ritual to banish?
No.
No, they just kill.
Fed it to the dragons.
Well, I mean, it made for a story. For the story if she was just like, oh, I've got her, slash.
Right. Oh. Right. And now, so
during this battle here, though, Dave, I wanted to mention this here. So what did you guys think about the special effects of the Ebersisk?
Ebersisk? Is that the two-headed?
Yes.
For the time, not bad. I mean, it was all practical effects.
Reminded me a lot of, like,
I always thought those were cool.
Yeah, they reminded me a lot of the type of stuff you'd see with like Jason and the Argonauts way back in the day. The
two-headed dragon. Right. Hey, can I drop a fact on you on this one?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not the same fact I have, is it?
It is. I can almost guarantee it.
Dropping some flick facts.
Even though it's never actually called the Ebersisk, that two-headed dragon is named after Siskel and Ebert.
Yes.
Oh, that's clever.
Yeah, it's a nod to the film critic Siskel and Ebert. That's where I was heading.
Yep.
It's heading, somebody had to like, steal my thunder.
It's fitting that you were heading there and Adam headed there also, since it's a two-headed heads. Beast.
Yep.
How about the way Mad Mardigan kills it? Drives a sword through its brain, down through its lower jaw. You'd think that would do the trick, but it's not. It's the fact that it basically, much like a toothpick on an overflowing club sandwich, is holding the mouth closed and it's trying to breathe fire, and all that fire stays in its head and boom, blows its head up.
Dave, everybody knows the Ebersisk's brain is in its foot.
Well, again, that...
What
that,
was I stealing that from?
I don't know.
I don't know that one either.
I'm going to just guess. Stranger Things.
No, was it Star Wars? Everybody knows the something is in the something. Oh, that's so vague. I know. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
It was a play on something I had heard in a movie. Sorry.
Okay. That one landed well.
I know. I landed it.
Landoed it.
Yeah.
The thing is, that's another one of those moments where, tone-wise, the super dark transformation into the pigs, but then we see Willow... haphazardly, all of a sudden, he's using this little wand, and he thinks kills this troll that's trying to eat him, and it melts down into this like nasty bubbling pile of something. He kicks it into the water, and it acts like an Alka-Seltzer, and suddenly grows into this giant thing, where he kind of created that problem. But at the end of the day, it kind of saved. Yeah, even though good guys were killed with it too, but it kind of saved the day because it forced everyone to fight against that and not just each other. Mm-hmm. So,
plop plop. Fizz,
it felt
fizz,
like a weird.
Oh, what a relief it is.
That Ebersisk felt like such a weird addition on one hand, but at the same time, it's kind of the easy plot device to, you know, explain how this super small group of people can storm a castle full of soldiers and still win.
Yep.
You know, it was needed for that.
I just think when they stormed the castle and the Princess Bride, it was a little bit cooler. Have fun storming the castle!
I am the Dwight Pirate Wobbots.
So we get to the end of this, like we say, and we know that the daughter fights against her mom. She almost gets killed, but the good sorceress saves her. And then Willow... pulls a magic trick out of his hat that we saw at the very beginning when he was at that big festival trying to make a pig disappear, ironically. And he switches the baby. The queen ends up doing her spell to banish the baby and accidentally basically banishes herself instead. So the good guys win. Baby goes on now.
You forgot about the acorn, dude.
Well, he threw an acorn, and it worked, and started turning her hand to stone until
she's too powerful.
Yeah, she basically laughed it off. She beats the good sorceress with her magic is too powerful, and Willow then ends up saving the day because he hides the baby behind a stone and then wraps something up that this woman, that the evil queen thought was the baby. She casts her spell, and then it banishes her instead. And suddenly we fast forward to... Mad Mardigan and Sorsha are now the, essentially, I suppose, king and queen of the kingdom. Willow goes back home, a hero. And we never find out what happens with the baby besides it's being raised by Mad Mardigan and Sorsha.
I think she grew up to be a goth.
Yeah.
She was so emo.
Well, it's weird for me. And that's why I asked you earlier, Adam and Jason, is this movie about... Eldora, what was the baby's name? Eldora? No.
Alora.
Alora. Is it about the baby and the good versus evil battle there, or is it about Willow's journey?
It's about Willow because George Lucas wrote it for Willow.
Right, I get that, but what do we see happen? Like, everything ends as he gets back, and there is a little celebration, but it's like we don't get to see... You just have to assume it's happily ever after, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know,
well, he's given the book to become the, you know, to keep working towards being a sorcerer.
Right.
And all that stuff. He's mastered every, you know, he's overcome all the adversity and all the odds.
But
to
did
come
the,
through on his
did
adventure.
That big fat bald guy, Nelwyn or whatever, I can't remember his name, did he let him keep his lands? Did he become the next apprentice? That's what I mean. Like, they had a big celebration.
Well, I like to think that he did.
I'd like to think he just said, screw the Nolans.
George Lucas wrote 3 more books and never made them into movies about Willow.
So there are follow-up stories out there.
Yes. Yeah. Well, book number 2, it all concerns a ring in Mordor.
I'm going to look up the name of this book because I'm
no,
sure.
It's not Mordor. It's Rodom because Mordor was already there from Tolkien.
Da, da, da.
But that's okay. Where it left me, like the ending of this movie, while it was good, it felt very much like that was a fun story. Let's wipe our hands of it and we're on to the next thing, you know?
So Lucas outlined the Chronicles of the Shadow War trilogy to follow the film. And he hired a comic book writer and novelist, Chris Claremont, to adapt them into a series of books. They take place 15 years after the original film and feature the teenage Elora Danan as a central character. The book is Shadow Moon, Shadow Dawn, and Shadow Star. Get ready to nerd out because
I might have to read those.
I might have to read them.
Yeah, because I kind of want to know more about what happens in this world.
Well, and if they, you know, it's a little too late now, but it would have been awesome if he would have all of a sudden did the second in the series, and he could have had, mini-me, Vern Troyer play, play his son.
I think he would, yeah. Yeah. I think he would have had possibly, I mean, you wonder if it was today, would he have had a good trilogy on his hands, possibly? You wonder why the next ones never got made. That's interesting.
Well, in 2018, there was talk about a sequel.
Yeah.
Now, does Disney own Willow? Did George Lucas sell it?
I have no idea.
Or is it just Star Wars?
I thought he just sold Star Wars.
I didn't know if he owned his whole,
right?
You know, everything.
So,
he's done.
You know, remember Warwick Davis was in the movie Solo.
Who did he play there again?
He was the one of the little warrior dudes.
Well, how old is he now?
Guys.
Oh yeah.
50. Well, there's a quote from him in 2018. He says, and I quote: "I remember a particular day which was very special on Solo. I was working with the second unit and Ron, because Ron Howard directed Solo.
Right, yep.
And I got a message through saying, oh, George is here today. He's talking about George Lucas. He'd like to see you. So I went on set. It was the day they were on the Falcon. I remember myself, George, John Kasdan, Kathy Kennedy, all chatting about Willow. I would think this is like the stars have aligned right here. If anybody's going to get a sequel or something else made in regard to Willow, this is it, and this is the time to do it. Who knows? Kind of a watch this space, I guess. Kind of watch this space. So Warwick Davis is interested. That would be awesome.
I wouldn't want to. Well, although he'd probably at this point play a classic old man king that's past his fighting days and now a big fat slob, you know, Val Kilmer.
Oh, geez. Nice. Yeah, Val Kilmer.
No,
celebrities have a rough social pressure to see.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine being judged like that? I mean, I'm a fat slob. I'm a fat slob too, but it's funny because he would fit the role. I was thinking Game of Thrones, but you think of like Robert Baratheon early in season one, how that kind of a king who used to be this fierce warrior, now he's just a drunken whoremonger.
<You know? laughs> All right, I got 2 last facts to drop now that we've ended this.
All right,
dropping some flick facts. All right, can you guess who else auditioned for the role of Mad Mardigan?
Actors at that, Tom Cruise would have been big. I don't see him.
No, that was Tom
that.
Hanks.
And I'm just joking. There's no way you're going to be able to guess. There's so many actors.
Took a while for that one.
John Cusack auditioned for it.
I'm surprised John Goodman auditioned for that.
John Goodman, oh my goodness.
I couldn't see John Cusack in that role. I'm sorry, I couldn't.
You are great. And he's like standing out in the rain.
with a boombox over his head.
Yeah. All right. So the actresses who played
Baby, who was the
Allura,
other one?
No, that was it. That's the only.
Oh,
other
I
one.
Thought you said there was two others that.
No. Okay. No, sorry. Okay. The actresses who played Baby Allura, Kate and Ruth Greenfield. They never acted again. This was their one and only credit.
Really?
Yeah. So kind of. I mean, that's like a who cares, but it was just a kind of interesting, you know, that they never did anything else.
Yeah.
I guess the pigs kind of scared them and they never, never did anything else. all right. Well, I guess it's about time for us to decide on a rating.
You go first. Final thoughts and a rating. Hit us.
All right. So my final thoughts here is this movie, I think I probably enjoyed it a lot more the first time. I didn't really enjoy it. I didn't rage quit it or anything, but I did not really enjoy this movie. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you for 100% fact right now that I will never watch this movie again. Not that it's absolutely horrible, but there's nothing in it that brings me to want to watch it again.
Sure.
Even with my kids, if my kids are like, hey, let's watch Willow, I'm like, all right, you go ahead. I'm going to surf the net on my tablet. I don't think I ever want to watch it again. There's just nothing that's drawn me to it. So being that I said that, I am actually giving this, and I don't know if this is my lowest of all time, but I'm giving it 2 out of 5.
Okay.
Ooh, that might be your lowest. So you liked Hardcore Henry better than this one.
Well, yeah. I'll watch that again anytime.
All right. So I'm hitting. Jason's
I'm an adrenaline
giving it two
junkie.
Out of five. And so I'm gonna counter that with a.
No. You have to do your original. You cannot change it based on what you want
it.
The final score to be.
First,
I'm
not give us
the
future.
First,
I was only
going
to go a 3, but I want it to be higher, so
I'm
going a 4.
I was
going to
give us a 3.5. I'm not fully countering, so it's still on your side. So I'm giving it a 3.5. I've always enjoyed this movie. I like the fantasy genre, especially the 80s. Like a lot of it's nostalgia. Yep. You know, it's definitely not perfect, but to me, it's still quite enjoyable. And sure. It kind of, you know, that's my 2 cents on it. I just liked it. So.
All right.
I think for me, I mean, if you can get past the weird time, like passage, how it just seems to, there doesn't seem to be any continuity or like grounded reality of how much time is actually passing. It's not really clear to me. And I never noticed that as a kid. I remember really enjoying this movie when I was growing up. Haven't seen it since I was a kid, but with that, and then the slightly, you know, confusing tonality of the movie where, you know, like I said, sometimes super dark, other times very lighthearted fun. And then you also get this weird love story element where it's like father-daughter type of love between Willow and this baby. And then the Mad Mardigan Sorsha love story that happens. It's kind of a weird mashup, but it kind of works, you know? And so overall I'd say I'm going to just sit right at a 3 in Jason's normal spot. Cause it was enjoyable. It was enjoyable.
I should have given it a 4.5. Like, dang.
I thought it was fun. I would probably watch it again sometime in the future, not real soon, but this is a kind of movie I love the fantasy genre and that kind of things, but it's one that very nostalgic, like Adam said, but it's not one I need to watch often either, you know, because
so
I remember.
So what is
it.
That? Like a 2.75 then, Adam?
Got to run the figures here. Carry the 4.
You Jason, doing some ciphering?
Well, he's 2. Figuring
8-3.
That. 2.83.
So, that means we're feeding this one to the dogs.
Whoa.
You can't feed Will to the dogs,
now,
Jason.
Adam is
they try
bad.
In the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
That's true. That's
Jason,
true.
I wanted to ask something. You had posted a question in our Facebook page earlier. Mm-hmm. If anyone had any questions or anything for you, what did you get back?
I don't think I got anything. Hold on. Let me pull it up here real fast. You could have warned me before you asked me.
Well, you are the one who earlier today said,
I am the one.
We are
I'm
recording
Neo.
Our Willow Super Review tonight and would love to get your thoughts on the movie. Message me here or email before 9 p.m. Central to have your thoughts on the show. And then he didn't think to pull it up.
No, nice I didn't. Going. Well, you know what? I was too busy, you know, doing a show here. All right. So I did not get any emails. I just wanted to check that again here real fast. All right. You guys ready for this?
Yep.
Listener Chris Halstead said, the movie with Val Kilmer? and then Jesse was like, no idea.
Oh.
And then Chris said, if it's a movie I'm thinking of, there's a dwarf with magical powers who's trying to save a baby from an evil queen. Straight off of Internet Movie Database there, Chris. Yeah, that is the one you were thinking of. Verbatim.
What?
And then Heather says, yes, it's the dwarf movie.
Oh, boy.
Yep. And then Jesse goes, I simply don't remember it. Yet he, you know. Jesse is supposed to know everything about movies. Said, I haven't seen it since...
I don't think he's ever made that claim.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since I was a kid, though I really enjoyed it. Pretty sure George Lucas wrote the movie. And I said, yes, he did. And Ronnie Howard directed it. And then Chris is like, yes, they made magic together. It's not the most original film. It's Moses, Snow White, many, many other sci-fi movies, but it was so worth it. And he also said it doesn't take itself too seriously, like Dave said. The acting was pretty good. It wasn't too cheesy. I mean, it was cheesy, just not too cheesy. And then I told Jesse, he better listen to the show, you know, to see what we have to say about it. And he goes, every Friday, you know this. And that's it.
All right. So we got some feedback.
Yeah, a little bit of feedback here. But, you know, Adam wasn't in there at all. That was so weird.
Well, I would say this. You know, we're right on the fence with our rating at the 2.8. Now, that's our rating. We also got, you know, some feedback in what you just read. People saying that, you know, the ones that remembered it.
No, were Dave,
like,
it's not based on users. Our score is based on the three awesome
dudes.
That's
not what I'm saying. We're not changing our score. But if, you know, we're so close to on the fence, technically we're serving this to the dogs. But... you did hear some extra reviews, so if you haven't seen this or you haven't seen it in a long time, it might be worth looking at, even though our score is still technically serving it to the dogs.
And yep. Adam loved it. I mean, he. Mm-hmm. I'd like to go back and see how many movies he rated this above. I think you liked this better than John Wick, if I remember right.
I liked it better than Bridges of Madison County.
Everything is better than Bridges of Madison County.
Can I ask you guys a question here? Because we all saw this as kids, too, right?
Yeah, well, I was 17 when it came out, so technically I liked girls, but go ahead.
What do you think you would have given it? What kind of rating would you have given it back then?
I think I probably enjoyed it more than I did now.
So what would that turn into, you think?
I don't know. Maybe I'd give it, you know, what Adam did, maybe about a 3.5.
Okay.
That's what you gave Warcraft.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, Adam, for you?
I'd probably still be about the same.
Yeah, I think as a kid, I probably would have put it up closer to a 4, because I remember I loved this movie, except for the one part that terrified me the first time I saw it. But but yeah, that's interesting. Well, cool. We mentioned one of our listeners, Jesse, and he has provided us.
I wish I could have his girl.
Jeez. He has provided us.
I know, I've done that joke before. I'm sorry.
He has provided us with a new batch of matchups, I guess you'd say, for the Geek Off. So should we get into the Geek Off?
Yeah, what time is it?
It's time for a Geek Off.
All right, so these were provided by a friend and listener of the show, Jesse, and he gave us the I Got Your Back Bad Guys from the 80s edition.
Yes.
All right. So I'll ask you guys these. And number one, he wants to know Clarence from RoboCop versus Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
Is Clarence RoboCop?
He's the bad guy. This is the bad guys.
No, but... oh.
Hans Gruber.
Well, Hans Gruber, yeah, it says Gubber there, but yeah, Hans Gruber right. was awesome.
Yeah, I would say he's going to be one of those villains that's yep. pretty
Professor
hard to
Snape
beat.
Professor Snape for the win.
Right, right. That's a pretty easy one for me, although RoboCop, I love that movie.
Oh, yeah, he's in Harry Potter, isn't he? Okay, yep. He's better as Hans Gruber. Since I haven't seen any of the Harry Potters.
He's, yeah, he was good. He was a fantastic actor, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He did. Well, oh, he died? God back, rest yeah. his soul.
Yeah.
Year or two
really?
Ago.
I was just making yeah. fun yeah, at nice first. Gone.
Yeah, way to go.
Huh. What happened?
Well, life cycle. Anyways, Next matchup, Biff Tannen, our favorite bully from Back to the Future, versus Ace Merrill from Stand By Me.
Ooh.
You got to, you know, refresh my memory. Who's Ace
Merrill?
Kiefer
Sutherland, mm-hmm. right?
I think so, yeah.
And Stand By Me, he's the guy with the knife, the older brother.
Yeah.
That you would never want to mess with. Mm-hmm. He was the alpha of the group.
I would probably say, for me, I would say Ace, because I think Biff was more of, you know, if he didn't have his boys with him, he wasn't mm-hmm. much of anything. Where it sounds like the way you just described Ace, he's, you know, he could be.
I'm going to agree, but for different reasons. I think Ace Merrill would go the extra mile and actually cut a guy.
Yeah.
Although Biff Tannen did try to kill him, Marty, with his car, so.
True.
But yeah, Ace was Ace. I wouldn't want to face Ace.
That is not the place with the helpful hardware face either.
No.
Let's not be confused.
Helpful hardware face?
Yeah, that's what I always think of. Yeah.
And he's not trying to save animals either.
Yeah, no detective skills.
Oh.
Ace okay. Ventura, right. Adam, come on. With
Merrill.
All right, so here we go. We've got Ivan Drago from Rocky IV versus Lord Humongous from The Road Warrior.
See, and I don't remember
him either, really, but I'm going to go with Drago. Did you see the training montage in Rocky IV?
Right.
He's gonna own.
I would have went Drago either way.
Yep.
I must break
if he dies,
you.
He dies.
Yeah. All right. This next one's a big one. We're getting some mobsters into the mix. We've got Al Capone from The Untouchables versus Tony Montana from Scarface.
Oh man.
Now I haven't seen either of these movies. Oh. I know. It's so weird.
Next Super Bowl.
I'm going to have to go with Tony Montana because he's like, I've seen this scene so many times. All I have in this world, balls and my word.
Say hello to my little friend.
I can't believe, you're like, I haven't seen it, but I've seen this phrase. And I thought for sure we were getting the say hello to my little friend.
That one? Well, because Ghetto Boys, they sampled that too into one of their songs. And it was like, all I have in this world, balls. Bald and my word. Bald. But I'm going to go with Tony Montana.
Capone, though.
Yeah, or Stevie
Capone
Connecticut.
Capone is like
I'm
the OG
sure.
here.
Yeah.
Boy, that's a tough one.
Yeah, but he got taken down for tax evasion.
I'm going to go with Capone, I think.
I would, too.
Just
but not
because.
By much. I mean, Tony right. Montana...
That's a coin flip.
He was like in a mountain of cocaine,
right?
Shooting a machine gun,
right.
Not a care in the world. I just think his accuracy isn't going to be as high.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Capone's got the old outlawed Tommy gun,
right?
Thompson 45.
Right. All right. So our last matchup, we've got Freddy Krueger, Nightmare on Elm Street versus Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th.
Wasn't that a movie? Who won?
Freddy versus Jason. I don't know.
Technically, Jason won, but when he was carrying the severed head of Freddy, Freddy looks
That's
at the
right,
camera
yeah.
and winks. It's Ooh. Not over. And then they never had a sequel.
I'm gonna go with Wolverine.
Still burns me. I'm sure you're talking about Krueger.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to go with Freddy Krueger too because. Even though Jason Voorhees, you know, it's magic. He's magical too. He can pop up anywhere. I don't think he has the intellect that Freddy Krueger does. Freddy Krueger was pretty ingenious in some of the ways.
And he had the worst video game on the NES.
Yes. Well, actually, Friday the 13th was pretty horrible too.
That's
if you played that one on the NES. Oh.
I was talking about Jason Voorhees having the worst video game.
Okay. Well, Nightmare on Elm Street on the PC, which was back in the 90s, early 90s, was very bad, too. Oh.
These were some really good head-to-heads here.
Yes.
I really like these. Thanks,
this is
Jesse.
A good one. Absolutely. Now, guys.
Okay, well, let's mix this up a little bit here. Let's take the ones that we won. Okay, let's do Hans Gruber versus Ace Merrill versus Ivan Drago versus Al Capone versus Freddy Krueger.
All right, so one big battle royale. Here's how it goes down.
Yeah.
You've got this giant ring, so to speak, and Al Capone's going to be standing outside shooting everyone. Hans Gruber yep. might do the same thing. So you'll end up with Al Capone and Hans Gruber face to face in the ring until Freddy Krueger just slaughters them all in their sleep.
Yeah, because right. you can't kill
so
Freddy.
So I think Freddy's got to win in that case.
Yeah, and the big battle royale. Now, is this a tables, ladders, doesn't and chairs matter. Match?
No, it's shoots and ladders.
Is this a money Freddy, in the bank
Freddy
match?
Will generate whatever he needs in that dream world. So, guys, I just realized mm-hmm. one thing before Adam starts wrapping us up here. We never
check it.
Announced what our next super review is going to be.
Who picked Willow?
Well, I threw the suggestion out there. And then,
okay, so it's technically you picked it. Then I picked the one prior. So Adam, it's your choice.
Oh, man.
What are we doing?
Pressure. Ding 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 ding. Ding.
I know, right?
Okay, press.
Wait a second. What? Vanilla Ice. What was he in? What movie?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Yes.
No, there we go. Not, the
we're not watching that crap.
Okay, listeners, if you want us to watch Secret of the Ooze, let us know.
Oh, man.
Okay, so.
I'm just kidding.
Have you guys seen The Last Samurai?
Yeah. Tom Cruise?
Yeah, Jason, have you seen that one?
Long time ago. When no. it came out in theaters, I saw it.
Can't we watch Crippled Masters?
I'm just really in the mood for a martial arts yet awesome kind of movie to watch. Yes.
Oh, The Matrix?
Matrix 5. Okay, here's what we're gonna do.
All right, so the last
I'm thinking
Samurai.
The Last Samurai. Otherwise, I'm gonna go into Google and just type in random movie, and let's see what happens.
You just type
random
and
movie
see what
generator.
Pops up. Bridges
and
of
we've
Madison.
Got drum roll. Ooh, Sicario.
Oh, a sequel
yep.
just
well,
came
that,
out.
Well, the sequel popped up on here, but have you seen the first one, Jason?
I have not. I haven't seen it.
Let's watch Sicario.
I guess it's we
yeah,
have.
I think I've
it,
got
so.
the Blu-ray.
You can borrow my DVD.
Perfect.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll do that.
You can borrow Sweet. My VHS.
I only right. have Laserdisc.
Be kind. Rewind.
Well, I'll just connect my my T1. So, guys, it's time to put a lid on the soup. And before we let you go, stick around because in today's Unsigned Music Spotlight. From Digital Soup, we have Insidious Siren 2, The Tyrant is Dead. That's the name of the song by the band Barrel Eye.
Yes.
Barrel Eye rose up from the roots of thrash death metal to reach a melodic and progressive path. Its first evidence of life was the release of the Virus EP in 2014, 2 years after Barrel Eye's establishment. Once a stable lineup unfolded, numerous local shows were performed. Followed by the release of the first full-length album, Urged to Fall, in 2015. A powerful live performance combined with a good number of concerts organized at that time helped to quickly gain visibility along with a fan base. So, that's the band Barrel Eye with the track Insidious Siren 2, The Tyrant is Dead. It sounds like it's the sequel to something. We're going to have a link to their Facebook page on our site. And for all things Digital Soup, head on over to digitalsouppodcast.com where you can listen to all of our episodes, connect with us on social media. In addition to that, anywhere where you listen to podcasts, you can typically subscribe to us. So we'd love to have you subscribe, tell a friend about us, and leave a review on iTunes. That would really help us out. From all of us at the Digital Soup Podcast, to all of you, you're probably sick of me talking. Have an awesome time. Have an awesome week. And we'll catch you next time.
Take care, guys.
Later, my galaxy fold. I saw my baby.
From a stupid Daikini.
Shut up, Pex.